Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast. Today is January, was it 18?
Nigga, it's the 14th.
14.
Wait. A. Martin Luther King birthday Monday?
Yeah, but MLK's is the first, is the, like the second, third Monday
the
of
third.
The month.
It's always the third birthday. Monday.
Oh, I thought she was always like the 20th or something like that.
January 15th. Is the actual,
it's his
birthday.
Actual birthday.
Exactly. Yeah.
The it observance goes on third Monday.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Never mind.
Happy belated Founders Day to all, because we do have a lot of Taurus who listen. A special shout out to BADST, the Beta Alpha Stars from FAMU, because a lot of them listen too. So
is that what that means? I thought it was bad DST, like bad deltas.
I think some people do that, but it really means Beta Alpha Chapter, which is Country Cousins Chapter and yes. Irene's Chapter, friends of the show.
And I don't think and, she listens, oh, but, Doc- what's her name? Kiana, KJ Rose.
Yes, KJ Rose is mm-hmm. also her chapter. It's also K Michelle's chapter.
Oh, so she did go to FAM, that's right. That's mm-hmm. right. All right, yeah, well, happy Founders Day to y'all.
Happy Founders Day.
Well, I guess not with COVID, you can't, but I guess usually like a celebration, right. Y'all go
yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah, we used to do a joint at, like, last year? No, 2020. Jesus, how many years have we been in COVID? 2020.
Two plus.
That's so crazy. 2020, right before shutdown, like, we would do someplace in the city, like, for the metro area, so it was like 40-40 that year. I almost never go, mm-hmm. because I'm 23 this year. Like, I'm old to be outside at Greek stuff. But I went that year, and I'm glad I did. I actually did more stuff. I usually don't go outside in January at all because it's cold. And I did more stuff January 2020. It's like somehow I knew, like, bitch, get it in. Because you're not going to go outside ever again.
About to be over.
Right.
Done.
If only we knew.
But yeah. It's cool. So it'll be like, it's a great event because it'll be like Soras of all ages, and there are other things that happen during the year, but yeah, there's usually like a Founders Day event, and then chapters usually host a Founders Day brunch, but that's not always in January. Sometimes that comes a little later.
What do y'all do now? Just do Zoom calls?
Yeah, like there was like a Delta official had like a whole virtual Founders Day event yesterday, which I did not log on to. Okay. And I'm sure, like, chapters have been doing, you know, virtual events and stuff like that. Yeah. Founders Day is usually, like, a big fundraising event. There's a host chapter for, like, the metropolitan area every year. It switches, you know, that okay. type of thing. So, all right. Well, come out in their furs. You know, it's that situation.
Yeah. Happy Founders Day.
Happy Founders Day to all the January Greeks. It's that season.
Yeah. Happy birthday to Martin Luther King Jr. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, I don't. Did you say posthumous? I guess posthumous birthday. Yes. How old? I don't know.
If you black, you say black happy heavenly, say heavenly birthday. Yeah.
What did they say?
When you are black, you say happy heavenly birthday.
That's heavenly birthday. Okay. How old would he have been? He was born in 35.
Nah, he's born in 29.
You must be right. 29.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he would have been 83.
No.
Ninety-three.
Yeah, 93.
He was younger than my grandmother.
That's
so crazy.
Yeah, he's like, yeah.
That is crazy.
People kind of, I don't think people, I mean, some people do, but like some people don't realize, like, even when these people were killed, how young they were. 39.
Yeah, he was 39. And also, we don't realize, so even like with Gen X being the first gen post, Civil Rights Movement, I still just really, it really just clicked in my head like a couple, maybe last year even, that I was born less than 10 years after MLK was assassinated. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that really just kind of turned over for me.
Yeah, all this shit is recent. Yeah. I've been you know, I mentioned last week about my finding out that my cousin Harry Case was involved with Emmett Till's funeral. When I, so I've been I watched Woman of the Movement on ABC, and that,
did they put him in there?
No, they put the guy who owned the funeral home.
Okay.
That Harry worked for, that right. Rainer, I think it was A.B. Rainer from the home, but Harry worked for, he put A.B. Rainer in there.
Okay.
But there's an interview, I sent you an interview, there's an interview with Harry, like where he talks mm-hmm. all about what happened and how they dealt with it. But my point was, that led to there's also a documentary that ABC did on Emmett. And you like, so, you know, it was, you know, very deep and obviously very troubling, but you also realize it wasn't that long ago.
Nah.
Well, no, like his cousins and whatnot who were in the film and in document, they're alive.
They're still alive. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, this is what happened. And when they came in the house, and you know, Aunt Mamie's like, they're older, but they're living. This shit wasn't right. that long ago. Yeah. So it's just a trip to like, you know, think that all this stuff happened, and there are people who like literally, it's not like, you know, slavery. It's like there are people who like. Yeah, I was in the room when they came in and took him
right.
out.
Right, right.
You know, it's
yeah, none of this. None
and the,
of this
and the woman is alive still, I believe.
No, I think didn't she just die? I thought she just
died. She died recently.
I think she died recently, and she recanted yeah. on her deathbed.
Yeah. She said that.
Isn't that what happened, Inca? She finally admitted that she made the whole shit up on her deathbed. Yeah.
On her deathbed. I think she only lived a few more weeks after she lied, after she said she lied.
And then they did the white woman thing, which is tried to make her a victim.
Correct.
Like yes. I suffered so much because of what I lied, and apparently the husband used to beat on her, and that's why she was scared to tell him the truth. But it's like, nah, fuck all that, bro. Like I don't want to hear none of that shit, man. But yeah, it was just you know, it's just like it's tough to watch that doc. And I had said, you know, I'll keep it trill. I had said on the text thread that we have that I was kind of, I guess, troubled and disturbed with like why his cousins didn't stop him from going in the store,
right?
Because he didn't know the ways of the Deep South. He hadn't, right. That might have been the first time he had been south.
I mean, I was
say, only 14, you know,
they might have. My mom says that when she would go to South Carolina for the summer and you know, she'd be about to like prance her ass in the front door. They'd be like, Norma, you don't do that. She'd be like, well, whatever, you know, so.
Yeah, it could have been it because he was from Chicago and he, you know, he was
great, like, fuck that, you know, yeah, so
gregarious
yeah.
kid. Yeah. But my point was they talked to the cousin in this documentary and like that was the only time in the doc that he cried.
Aww.
He talked about like he didn't know, like I didn't, right. you know, he didn't know. He said, and I've lived with that my whole life, like that guilt of not. I mean,
they were also kids, man.
They were babies. Yeah, like 13 and 12. And
when you read it and when you kind of grasp the time and just sort of you get some understanding of context, you have to imagine that happened so fast.
Oh yeah.
And so it was probably such an inconsequential thing to them because they yeah. didn't do anything that it never even registered had occurred was a thing. It just yeah. never registered.
Yeah. And he had survivor's remorse. Like he's like, why did I live?
Well,
like, I came home and had to see my Aunt Mamie and like, goes, why did I live in my cousin? And they were like brothers, really. They were more like, you know, they're cousin brothers. Like they grew up together. So he's like, why is my brother not here? You know,
there's the obvious terror of what, you know, the physical part of this, right? Like when we see the body.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
there was also the actual terror of those men. They came into, they snatched him out of the house.
Yeah.
This was not.
And there was nothing they could do.
Yeah, like he was not like sort of, you know, wandering along a road and the car yeah. pulls up right. like in the movies. Like, no, like they literally pulled up to this house, held that family at bay. The men in that house were basically, they would have all died.
Yeah.
And they snatched him out of the house. So yeah. I have to imagine that playing in your head.
That had to be so traumatic.
Yeah. I feel obviously terrible for everybody, but one of the people I felt really bad for was the uncle. His name was Moses. They called him Mose as a nickname, because he couldn't do anything.
Right.
Like, he's in the house. Like Sean said, and then, you know, they lived like in the, you know, the, it was no electricity. It was no lights. So these cars pulls up. It's pitch black dark. They bust in the house. They, you know, snatch Emmett out the house, and his uncle can't do anything. He's like, please, no, don't take him. But he physically can't do anything. He has to like watch this unfold. And yeah, it was horrible. And I want to move on, because that was terrible. It's been so much death at the beginning of this year, man. So
what, yo,
we didn't, like, did we mention Sydney Poitier last week? We didn't, right?
It happened after we taped.
Yeah.
So I'm Sydney, like, these elders know something we don't know. They packing up.
So Sydney Poitier, the great Sydney Poitier, passed away after, like Nye said, after we taped last week, 3 or 4 years old. Iconic actor, activist, just, you know, a legend. I mean, it sounds so trite to say, but he was really literally a legend. Done, you know, many movies. The first black man to win an Oscar. Was deeply involved in the civil rights movement. An immigrant, came here from the Bahamas as a child.
Was born here and then came back. He was actually born, his parents were on vacation in Miami.
Oh, is that what happened?
He was born. So he actually was an American citizen.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then he moved back. And but him growing up, because he moved back as a teenager, him growing up, I saw an interview where he was like, when he got back to Florida, like, the way they wanted him to act in Florida was like, I can't be that, you know?
Yeah,
it was like he had been raised to believe that he had certain inherent rights as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Florida, mid-centuries Florida was like,
sheesh,
other shit. But I think that's the thing about Sidney Poitier that for me always stood out. Wasn't just that he was like the barrier breaker, but that he didn't seem, no stories I heard about him seemed like he was negotiating anything. It was like, this is what's going to be.
Yeah.
This is what I demand. Like, that slap on the heat of the night, it was not in the script.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, I'm going to haul off and slap this white man on set.
Yeah, he put it in there. Yeah.
Basically, he's taking out his frustrations because, like you said, him and Harry Belafonte, they had been down with like the Freedom Riders and about like taking cash down, you know, to support SNCC and everybody, and been chased, you know, by white people and all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he had refused. He told them that he didn't like the film in the South. They did like 3 days in the South, I think. In like Tennessee or something, but he refused to shoot the movie in the South. And then in that Mr. Tibbs line, I guess he was just fed up. He was like, you gonna catch it. But like a black man slapping the shit out of a white man on set.
If you watch the scene, watch the butler.
Yeah.
There's a black butler, an elder black butler in the back. So when the man slaps Sidney, the butler's like, oh shit. But then I see when Sidney slaps him back, the butler's face is like, oh shit. Like,
it is real. Like that's back. Real. Yeah.
He hit him back. And he's like frozen, like, oh shit. He actually hit him back, you know?
Right.
But yeah, so we lost him. We lost James M. Toomey.
Yep.
He was a black militant, a black activist as well, and a phenomenal music producer, television producer. Executive produced New York Undercover.
He did the music for New York Undercover.
Okay. Yes, right. Yeah. Who did? Andre did.
Andre and Dick Wolf.
Yeah. And, you know, did great productions. Stephanie Mills, Phyllis Hyman, his own group.
I think that song Soul Sister by Bilal, he even did that.
He did, like, Back Together Again with Donny Hathaway and Roberta Flack.
Yeah.
Just,
he did, you know, did he do Where Is Love too? He did a couple of Donny and Roberta joints.
Arif Martin produced that, but he might have wrote it. He could have been involved with writing
it. He had a pen game.
Yeah.
But the thing about Msume, and he even started like a low key beef. Set of Sonics, All That Jazz is a diss record.
Yeah.
Because he was coming at hip hop slightly a little bit for sampling, which is ironic because this all happened before Juicy.
Yeah.
He
made a mint like, off. He made a mint off Juicy.
He made a fucking mint.
So much money off that record
for Biggie Juicy. But everybody I've seen comment about him has talked about how he shared a lot of wisdom. He was like a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's trying to school people behind him
on politics, and he would like he schooled a lot of music people on like publishing and mm-hmm. how to get your publishing right and stuff like that, and like really like schooling people on how to navigate through the music business because he was an expert at it. He had, you know, been with Miles Davis in the early, and like he had learned, you know, how to, he got burned and
learned,
yeah, and all that stuff. So he was. It was incredible. And he had a show called, what was that show called it on Kiss FM? Oh my God, I'm blanking. He had a radio show. Him, Bob Slade. Oh, I'm tripping.
Something Warriors.
Yeah, I used to listen to that show every Sunday. Like it was a
A good Sunday morning talk show.
Excellent. And they talked about, you know, obviously everything happened in New York politics. And
also, I was going to say the beauty of that is like that's pre syndication of radio. Like the radio that we know now is not very local. And that was a very local show. So they were talking about like borough presidents and they would give you information on where to go, you know, very specifically for programs, for rallies, for
all
sorts of stuff.
And they'd have like city councilmen on, like the super local people, not just the mayor. The mayor too, though. But they would go all the way down to like borough president of, you know, the Bronx, and like he'd talk about, you know. So yeah, he was a great man, and you know he'll be sorely missed. We lost Bob Saget, who
65. That was a shocker.
Yeah, starred in Full House and was the first host of America's Funniest Videos. And was this, you know, stand-up comedian, and by all accounts, from seems like everybody was like literally one of the nicest people like people ever met. Like he was matter of fact, Deion Cole posted a screenshot. Deion Cole lost his mom very recently, I guess probably within the last month or two, something like that. And obviously, it's, you know, been tough for him. And he posted a thing of Bob Saget, who he didn't even really know. Bob Saget sent him a text like, "Yo, like I." Sorry, what you're going through. Like, he said, "I met you through Tiffany Haddish." He said, "I met you through Tiffany just the one time, and I really liked you. And we don't really know each other, but I got your number from her because I just wanted to let you know, like, I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah." Like, so he was just like that type of dude, man. He's like, everybody says he was just the sweetest, nicest, caring dude.
Yeah, I saw some people say, and I mean, I want to acknowledge too that I can't remember specifics. I just know there was some problematic stuff with Bob at some point, but I don't remember what it was. But people who knew him were saying stuff like he would just text you, be like, "Yo, I love you," type shit, you know? Which, you know, if you die tragically at a young age, to at least have done that while you were here, right? That part is a blessing that he did that. Obviously, his Full House family is fucked up.
Yeah, John Stamos, because him and John Stamos is literally best friends. Like, John Stamos is like, so he's devastated, you know. And all of them, because he was like a father figure to the Olsen girls.
For real.
Like, they all really loved him.
The funniest thing for me most interesting thing to me about Bob Saget was realizing, you know, once I got in my 20s and Full House was over and Bob started being like himself, that he was like all like more of a kind of out there comedian, you know, starting with what was it, Half Baked that he was in?
Yeah, Half Baked.
Starting with Half Baked, like, oh, he's actually like out here doing drugs and talking shit and whatever. He's not like
this. He's not like America's dad.
Yeah, America's dad at all. Yeah.
And then lastly, I just want to mention Ronnie Spector, who most listeners might not know, but she was married.
And then Ronnie Spector died.
Yesterday.
Oh shit, I missed that.
She just died yesterday. Yeah.
Wow. So
she passed away. She was married to Phil Spector, and she had the song called "Be My Baby," which I'm sure everybody has heard at some point in their life. And she's from Harlem. She's from uptown. And you know, she was like
you look like a young Cardi.
Yeah, if Diana, for lack of a better term, if Diana Ross is kind of Beyonce, Ronnie would be kind of Rihanna. Like, she was like kind of like the bad girl, you know? But she never got a chance to really expand on her career because Phil Spector was very abusive and very controlling. So she never got to really do. But there's actually a movie being made about her as we speak, starring Zendaya.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so she's going to get her story told. So peace to Ronnie Spector, Harlem Zone. Let's talk about, did y'all watch Euphoria?
Oh, of course.
I did.
Did you watch it, bro?
No. Absolutely not.
Yeah, I can see this is not really being your type of show.
God bless.
Yeah. So Euphoria came on season 2, episode 1, Sunday night premiere.
And a weekly 1 hour heart attack.
They jumped right in. No fucking around. Like season 2.
No fucking around.
Let's go. And this episode was the backstory of one of the most popular character in the show, Fez.
I love Fezco on-site Jenkins.
On-site. With no hesitation. But the flip side of him is he's like a really like nice kind of like he's
incredibly compassionate. Yeah.
Well, you know what Dante Ross said to me, which I think is interesting. We were tweeting about it. He said that Fez is the new Omar from The Wire. Like,
I could agree with that.
Like, mm-hmm. And I was like, word, layered, a very surprising humanity and compassion, but still completely fucking ruthless.
Yeah,
like,
psycho.
Yeah,
yeah,
and is a mentor.
And it's
in a weird sort of way.
Like has really deep love for the people that he cares about, but also as proven in the episode, will absolutely fuck you up.
Yeah,
on sight.
And we understand why violence is necessary.
And don't forget nothing. Like we'll hold it, we'll wait.
Yeah.
We'll wait until the time is right.
And then set it.
Right.
So
Ash just won my heart.
Ash is ashtray. Ash is lit.
Ash is about that. Okay?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, kid.
Day one. Yeah.
So we got the backstory on Fez and his grandmother, which was interesting because, you know, up to this point, the only time we've seen, for those who don't watch the show, we've got spoilers, but the only time we've gotten to see the grandmother is she's been incapacitated in a bed. We've never heard her talk. We don't know. Yeah. We didn't know anything about it. We barely kind of see what she looks like now because she's always like, you know, she's been in the bed so long. She's kind of, you know, shriveled up a bit. So we get to see her in her full glory. Who she was and how she spoke and how she dressed and, you know, how she carried herself. And now you get to see why Fez is the way he is because of the things that his grandmother put into him.
And had him around, like she basically
had him around. Yeah,
he's a little kid. She used him as a partner in her damn enterprise. Like,
yeah,
at 10 years old.
Yeah. But you count the money, you bag the shit up, you watch over your brother who was collateral.
Somebody never picked up one
like a pawn shop.
Crazy.
Yeah. So it was a great episode, and I know Nasa, you mentioned this on Twitter. They decided to shoot this whole season on film.
Yeah, they shot. They called. So Sam Levinson is his father. Directed like Good Morning Vietnam and Rain Man and shit like that. So you know he, even though his first big work is Euphoria and then doing Malcolm and Marie during the pandemic and stuff. Obviously, he has like this Oscar winning producer father, so he's got that mindset. And they said that the cinematography was such a big part of season 1, they wanted to elevate it. And really the only way to elevate it was to move to the film. But they
Which is mad expensive,
but they called Kodak because the film that they wanted, Exochrome or something, actually wasn't made in 35mm. So they called Kodak, and Kodak just reissued it. So they called Kodak, like, can you make this for us? And Kodak shut down a whole factory. To fucking make this, that's the power of this show, right?
Yeah.
Like, to make this for them. So I was just like, I know, because also Succession, which you don't watch Succession, do you?
No, yeah.
We are missing out by not having talked about the last season.
Everybody says it's amazing.
I want you to know that. I just want the listening audience to know that we talk about the shows that Jeffrey watches, which is why you don't be hearing about. His hope is up. But Succession also shoots on film, which is gorgeous picture. But yeah, they're shooting this whole season, which is expensive as fuck. I think I heard something about $15 million an episode or something crazy.
Damn.
Because they're also so much music. But it was beautiful. It was gorgeous, especially like
The colors.
And Sean's face. Oh my god!
Yeah. It was beautiful. So
I want to rewind. There are two episodes that they aired special episodes.
Oh yeah.
Special one and season two also shot on film. One is
Rue
talking to Ali, her sponsor.
Yeah.
In a diner. About her sobriety and about her relapsing, and it's. I know, Jeff, that you don't like places that don't have like more than one scene.
I watched those are dope.
Okay, but it's really intense. And the second one,
they're like little plays, almost like
And the second one is Jules meeting with a therapist for the first time.
Yeah,
Jules, and that was really good too.
Hey, Trav. That's Trav. Oh Lord, I wasn't muted.
No,
my bad.
And talks about Jules and her her life and because Jules is actually a trans character. And it talks about kind of, you know, her life played by a trans person. Yeah. But the show is just great. The character development is great. The story is bonkers, and it freaks so many people out because people can't imagine kids who are in high school. These kids are in high school doing the shit they're doing. Like, it's not like they're like. Because I remember seeing the thing about Sam Levinson during the first season, and he was like, "Yo, I took this shit for my life."
It's based on him, but I mean, he's like, a Hollywood kid. But I mean, I think.
But the drugs and the da 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 da. Yeah. Like, he was like, this shit was happening. Like this was.
I think it's a generational thing, right? Because for me as an Xer, we grew up with like Less Than Zero, the John Hughes joints. Like Robert Downey Jr. was playing a drug addict who was in like 12th grade. You know what I mean? And the Brat Pack movies and everything. It was very this. 80s movies were very this on a different level, right? So for me, it's not that shocking. It wasn't my life, but between that and 90210 and shit like that, I was like, okay, apparently this is what white teenagers do with money.
Every documentary we watched and every, you know, basically every excerpt that we've gotten from that world has been exactly that. Like,
yeah.
We did a ton of drugs. We were fucking out here on our own. Our parents. When you look at the what's the young lady who was killed? The Robert Chambers and Jennifer Levin.
Jennifer Levin. Yeah.
So when they did a doc, that entire world of Upper East Side,
Going to Dalton and all that.
All of that shit. The Epstein, he comes from that world. All of that shit.
Even like the movie, like Cruel Intentions in the 90s. Like they were doing.
Was it kids? Kids
and kids. And kids was actually real ass motherfucking kids, right? Mm-hmm. Down in the Lower East Side and shit. So I think people who are like just hitting 40, they were parented so much differently than we were. And now their kids are being parented differently than they were. So this idea of having all this freedom and autonomy as a child to just be outside like that is a completely foreign concept to some people. Whereas for us on here, it was our reality. Like you was just outside until it got dark and then they go, where you at? But it wasn't where you at until it was dark outside. As long as it was sunlight, You out in the world, right?
I had to stop trying to compare it to my own high school experience because they were vastly different. Like, we were just not out here unaccounted for.
Was out here unaccounted for like a motherfucker. I was marginally accounted for.
I was miles away from home on an awful subway system at like 13. For myself, nigga.
You be all right.
Go to the Bronx.
Yeah, you be all right.
Hey, I gotta take the D train.
All the way up. Your word.
Nigga, you like the Warriors trying to get back home.
My cousins lived in Coney Island, and we would take the D train from basically one end to the next It was like the Warriors, nigga. You had to take off them headphones, nigga.
Right, and be like, what the fuck is happening?
Pay attention to what's going on out here.
Go through mild territories. Yes, I get it. And also, like, this is a generation with a different kind, like, their addictions are different. So now they might be addicted to prescription drugs or something like that. Whereas when in the 80s, it was like coke, but liquor was always present. But Rue's level of addiction is like, that's just grown up shit.
And
like,
Zendaya, who's from Oakland, so who's, I'm sure, seen some shit. She plays the addiction character so well, like the beginning scene when she's in the back. Rapping to hit him
wilding
up.
Wilding out.
Like,
Ash is like, bitch.
Yeah. I was like, yo, can you tell her to pipe down?
Pipe the fuck down. And then after they come out the house and they had to strip naked, and she's like, yo, that lady was a G. And she's just talking. And Fez is like, yo, shut the fuck up. We literally almost died.
Got killed. Yeah.
We almost got killed.
Like, how are you amped right now? She
plays that character like she should win every award for that. Oh,
we don't really call actors as young as she is, she's 24, character actress, but that is really what she is. She's a character actress.
Yeah, I mean, she's playing her and she's playing fucking Mary Jane.
Just came out. You know what I'm saying?
Malcolm Marie was
different. Like, she's
I can't wait to see her play Ronnie Spector. I think she's gonna body it. She's incredible. But all these actors, the kid that plays the quarterback, Nate is a psychopath, he's like Australian or British. He's not even American,
right?
Yeah, he's like
brooding. A lot of his scenes have no dialogue at all. Like, he says nothing.
Look at him, motherfuckers! Like,
he's the scariest person on screen.
Yeah, because he's really big. Yep. So he's towering over everybody too. Like, so yeah, but now the show is incredible, man. So like, if you're not watching Euphoria, like, you should be. It's a lot of things happening, a lot of intense things happening, but
it's very heavy.
It portrays addiction so well for me, just because of the unpredictability of this storyline. Like, I have no fucking clue what's going to happen next the whole time.
Like, a friend of mine was going to watch it, but her father was an addict, and she's just getting to a point where she's kind of talking about it. Like, she used to try to hide it and not talk. She's just getting to the point where she's like admitting it, and where she doesn't carry her own shame about it. And I was like, no, you can't.
Right, yeah, it'll trigger too much.
I was like, no.
I want
to
mention,
like, in the first season where Rue goes to rehab and comes out, and she's like, oh, I have no intention of staying clean. Like, I did that because they told me to.
Or remember the ride home. Remember last season, the scenes between Rue and her mom.
Yeah.
Was it, like, god damn, like, it ruined the sister. The little sister is also a great actress too.
She is, she's dope.
Great, like, tension and like a pain you can see between the three of them whenever they're on the screen together. Even if it's like a happy moment, there's always
it's well done. I wanted to mention an old show, just to mention, because I thought it was really well done. I meant to mention it weeks ago and just totally forgot. Love Life.
Season 2. Well, Love Life, period. Let me clarify.
I didn't watch season one.
So the first season is good.
You gotta watch season one. It's incredible.
And but I have been telling some black people, like, just go ahead and start with season 2, because it's kind of an anthology series.
Yeah.
You don't really need to have watched, even though the main character, Anna Kendrick's character from season 1, shows up in season 2, starting from the first episode, because the main character of season 2, his wife was friends with the person that Anna Kendrick marries in season 1, whatever. Yeah,
right.
But
it starts off like their wedding.
Yeah, the difference between season 1 and season 2 is that season 1 actually spans a longer amount of time. It starts when Anna Kendrick is in college, right? Ingo, doesn't it start in college? It starts in college, and we're looking at like maybe like a 15-year span of time. Way more.
Yeah, it's pretty long. I think she turned 35 in the last.
So we're looking at far more relationships in her life, whereas season 2 starts with the main character already married, well out of grad, like probably in his 30s already.
Yeah.
What I did not expect from William, what's his last name?
the actor? I can't remember.
Yeah.
The guy from The Good Place.
From The Good Place.
From The Good Place.
I did not expect a show this fucking black. Mm-hmm. It's black as shit.
Yeah.
Like, the dialogue, the scenario.
William Jackson Harper.
The dialogue, the scenarios. Like, there were points in that where I was like, how do they get these notes so, how do they get the beat so right? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's very hard to write everyday banter. It's hard. Mm-hmm. Which is why it often feels awkward. So I'm guessing there was some there had to be some improvisation in
it. I'm sure.
Because it's all so, like, there's this one moment where this chick he used to date is talking to the woman. I don't want to spoil anything for anybody. Talking to a woman he's with, and she's like, "And good luck to you." And she's like, "Good luck to you too, bitch." Like, and it's like, yeah, the way she hits it and looks at him, and she's like, "Wow, what was that?" Like, it's just, it's so on, like, all of it. Is just,
or even like when they first meet and you realize, or you see the white woman that he's with. And the black woman, like, immediately that makes sense. Knows. Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh.
He's like, that's my wife. And she's like,
he's like, yeah, I figured that.
And then he looks at her like,
you know, when a black guy is only into white women.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
And what that aesthetic is like. And Mia on the screen also knows that. So being able to, that was wonderful.
Yeah. But it's really well done. It's extremely well written, acted. There's a couple of Saturday Night Live cast members in there. The girl who plays his sister.
Is she from SNL?
Yeah, yeah, she's from
Punky
SNL.
Johnson.
Yeah, Pinky. Is it Punky or Pinky Johnson? One of the two. And then,
it's Punky.
And then one of the girls he dates, the one who wrote the play.
Okay. Oh, she's
from SNL. Live too. Mm-hmm.
I really have not watched SNL. Yeah.
She's a Nigerian girl from SNL. So yeah. So but it's just really well done. It's kind of like, I looked at it as kind of like, and maybe this isn't fair, it's kind of like a condensed version of the five seasons of Insecure. Like, it follows this arc of. Well, okay, but I'm gonna say it anyway. But it follows this arc of this dude. Who you know, it's married and that doesn't work out, and then he meets somebody
it's
not fair because Insecure is about Insecure is a coming of age story. This is not a coming of age story.
Yeah, but it's also Insecure.
You
also
need to watch the first season to see what they're doing. Yeah, it's not the same at all.
It's not the same. The way this works, Jeff, is that's the way the story works. Every episode is about, it's about your relationship past specifically, not just you growing as a person. But it's about how we evolve and realizing what we need as a partner and what we want to be as a partner, right? So, like,
isn't that what happened with Issa and Lawrence?
But that's not the main. But Insecure isn't just about that. Insecure is about becoming an adult and, like, getting jobs and paying bills and doing this life shit. The relationship is part of that, but so is the career path, so is the other shit. This one is primarily about, it's called Love Life, literally, right? It's about, like for example, in Anna Kendrick's season, and he has this kind of too in reverse. She has, like, the older guy, right? And, like, she's enamored with this older guy. She wants to try to be more mature, and she wants to try to play house, and then, like, his father dies, and she doesn't know how to act at the funeral, and all sorts of stuff, whereas he has the younger girl and he goes to the dorm and security dude at the dorm is looking at him.
That was loony. That part was loony. Was like, what are you doing, bro? She's at NYU.
Security guard's just looking at him like,
nigga, what are you doing? Yeah, like, mad chance. Right. I would have bailed on that, but I wouldn't have went through with that. But anyway, it's really good. It's really well done. It's really well acted. The main character reminded me of Jermaine Hall. His style, the way he dressed, the way he carried himself, like, he reminded me so much of Jermaine. So watch Love Life if you haven't.
He also did that thing that black men do really well, which is you meet them and they're super unassuming, and then they just get finer as you get to know them.
Somebody was like, the more we saw him around black people, the more he glowed up. But I think that's one thing he was realizing, right? Because that's the other thing with William Jackson, with this one, which I think is really poignant, and I haven't really seen done this way before, is, like, you know, one of the first things he says was, like, I always thought I would end up, we meet him married to a white wife, and I don't think it's a spoiler to say that, like, him and his wife split. I can say that part, because obviously.
And it was his fault.
His wife was. But he says that He always imagined he would marry a black woman. He was always afraid he would fuck it up. So you can tell there was maybe like a thought of like he wasn't cool enough. He wasn't hip enough or whatever. And meeting this woman in the first episode really makes him realize like, and he's looking at his wife. His wife's like doing drugs with her white friend, right? Literally, right? Like going to do like, don't you want to bump, honey? And she's a sweet. She's actually a really sweet character. Mm-hmm. And he's like, nah, I'm good. And just kind of realizing like, all right, this worked in grad school. It was cool in grad school, but like out here in life, the world,
yeah, it's kind of weird.
Because and weird. The first time, and also he's such a great code switcher, right? So he's like that. That black dude in the office, because there's only like two of them, but then he calls his boy. He's like, "What up, son?" Like, and not forcibly, but like his boy's like, "My God," he's like, "Yo, kid, wouldn't zap me up? How you not gonna zap me up?" He's asking Obama. Like the conversation, that shit is so. It was so poignant. It was so great.
Dope. Bro.
Even his own dad is like, "Oh, so you're not a narc?" Like, you know, it's like,
yeah, I like his parents too. His parents are dope. Bro, did you watch Steve? You watched a Steve Harvey show, right? The court show.
Yes,
I did. I want to bring you in.
Mad at how much I enjoyed it. I had a great time.
The fuck off! That I love this show. I was trying so hard to hate watch this shit. I'm like, man, damn it! I like this shit. Yeah. So Steve Harvey has a nighttime, and I don't understand. I tweeted. I don't understand why no network ever did this. Court shows
because network. Well, a couple things.
Break down.
Mostly because those are very easily syndicated shows, right? So they easily.
Network has never done what?
Because a nighttime court show.
Or a nighttime court show.
So it's just easier for them to do that. Like they have more real estate.
They
have also never had talent that big.
True.
We know Steve for a very long time. And so I don't think we maybe process all the time how big a talent he is, but that's a major get.
He's a major TV talent.
Yeah, he's a major TV star, man. Like, so it's totally worth it.
Yeah, so it's a nighttime. It's the same as a Judge Judy or whatever, but bigger production, bigger set, bigger everything. You know, brighter lights and so on. But at the core of it, it's the same as a court show. It might be like a couple, you know, beefing about a wedding that didn't happen, or you know, some friends beefing about this or whatever. And Steve is the air quotes, as Bruce said, air quotes judge. And, you know, he does the Steve shit. So go ahead, bro. I'm going to let you take it wrong with it for a minute.
Well, it is exactly what you would have thought a Steve Harvey show of him being the judge or something. It's almost like, I wouldn't say it's Strawberry Letter, but it's kind of like Strawberry Letter times like 12, right? Like he's a little more animated about this sort of stuff. And he doesn't take it as seriously in this particular instance. So it's really good. They do three. It's an hour long show.
It's a pretty long show,
and they do three different cases in that hour. Mm-hmm. And within that hour, you know, he obviously does the poking of fun and makes jokes and things like that.
He'll walk down off the bench and like
he'll walk like, down off, because you got this. Listen. That nigga's gonna let you see his fit.
Yeah, you gonna get this fit.
Yeah, y'all done gassed Steve set up so bad.
No,
like
he got that new stylist too.
Yeah, I believe for sure that is Tom Ford. So he is custom.
Yes.
He said he was too fly for a robe. I love it, right? Because it lets him add some of his personality in it. But also, he does give some pretty, these couple of shows have been pretty interesting because the advice has been sound.
Yeah.
He's called a couple people out, particularly old girl who took that 6 G's from her sister and then cremated her brother.
Yeah.
And then decided she was going to take that 6 G's and pay down her credit cards for her BBL. So, you know, he basically called all of that out. He put a timeline up, called her out on it.
He also called out old girl who jerked the girl with the trip to Atlantic City.
with your trip to Atlantic City. It's
that just fake raffle.
It's been very entertaining so far. Yeah. And producers, this is a show that is going to be relying on producers, because that casting is going to be very important to what he does, right? You're not going to be able to just watch, 45 minutes of fucking Steve Harvey making jokes at like utterly ridiculous people. Like, if you notice, the people are often, fairly attractive. They're made up nice. They're, they're put together. There's a little bit of history, these are not sort of strangers. It's interesting. It's interesting to watch. It's definitely on my DVR. I'm absolutely gonna watch it. It's absolutely the kind of show that you can get 5 or 6 episodes and just kind of let that rip on a Saturday or Sunday when it's raining and snowing outside.
You know what? That's the perfect show after y'all done ate Thanksgiving and mom and them sitting around. Yeah. Put that on. I ain't never seen Steve this. Harvey on. I'll put the Steve Harvey
put
on.
Put the new Steve Harvey on.
Like you said, and let it rip. And mom and them will be just good sitting there watching it, talking shit. I ain't like her way she look anyway. But no, it's actually a really, really good show. Piece to Abbott Elementary again this week. Just want to mention that.
Show.
Awesome show. Awesome episode again. And peace to the Wonder Years. Again, great show, perfect show. And this week they addressed, and I had mentioned it early, but I should have just shut up and like let it unfold. But they addressed one of the characters, Ben. Ben is his name, right? Is it Ben?
Greg? Gary.
No, the white kid, isn't it?
We'll go with Ben.
I can't remember.
Yeah, this is old black. It's the old black section.
Ben sounds cute.
Yeah, it's the old black section. But they mentioned they addressed the fact that he's a Jewish kid living in the deep South in the 60s, and he just about him going to his bar mitzvah. But he's also ostracized by a lot of the kids in the school for being Jewish. But then they slick, because they also addressed that even though he's Jewish, he had some relatives that were also racist. Even though they're Jewish and they get their shit, they still looking down on, the black people. But it was
maybe they heard Brad also. Pop Life podcast, and maybe they decided that they was going to address it for Jeffrey Slade.
Exactly.
It was a reasonable expectation for there to be some tension.
Exactly. But yeah, it was really well done. I enjoyed the episode, so I just want to give a shout out to them. I want to talk about the Bronx Fire, and just kind of like, and lead into like,
it was new mayor.
Exactly. Just lead into our new mayor, Eric Adams, his honor, as they call him.
Hoot.
So there was a huge fire in the Bronx last week. I don't know what section is that called. I don't know what section of town.
You said it was on East 181st
Street. 81st Street around Webster Avenue. But I don't know.
It's like Universal.
Fordham Heights. They say it's Fordham Heights.
Fordham Heights, okay.
Kind of area. Anyways, terrible fire. One of the many buildings in New York that are like, lower middle income buildings. They're not the projects.
They said the fire started in a duplex. And I was like, this is.
So a lot of those apartments are duplex apartments. So they're like. They're not, obviously high-end buildings, but they're not, not like on the, they're not like tenements either.
Is it one of the buildings like Park Towers in the Bronx where like back in the day when it first opened, it was kind of.
It looked like it probably was fly. It was kind of nice back in the day.
Like over the last 30 years. It's,
got worn out. Like a lot of those buildings up along the Grand Concourse are like that. Like you can see like they used to be that, and then over, they got worn down over years. But 19 people died, many others injured. It started with
I think that accurate number is 17.
It's 17 now?
There was miscommunication because they had to spread the victims out over many hospitals to kind of move them. And so I think that there was just a miscount, and there was a double up on one of the counts or two of the counts, obviously. But they came back. As early as, I think it was maybe yesterday, they had redid the count to 17.
Okay. and many, many, many people injured, many people now homeless. There was a lot of African immigrants in the building, said from Gambia, from a country, Gambia. I don't know why that those specific people moved into that building, but it's just a tragedy. You know, it's the winter, it's cold, people lost everything. The people who, you know, God bless the living. There's been an outpouring from the community, which has been beautiful to see. People bringing clothes and, you know, goods for babies and, you know, books for kids and so on and so on. It's been a huge outpouring from the community. And I will definitely give Eric Adams props for, like, pushing the people to get the services that they need. But it's also been tough because, you know, when these things happen, like, they have to stick people in hotels, you know, and that's weird because maybe hotels don't have enough room, or they're putting, like, you know, nine people in one room.
One of the, like, janky hotels that they converted to homeless.
Yeah, because they kind of keep them, they try to keep them in the area,
right,
general area where the building is, and there's no nice hotels in the Bronx, you know. Sure. So
the problem though here, which also, you know, Adams, you know, was on the scene quickly and was responsive, is that the landlord for this building, mm-hmm, is on Adams transition team for housing.
Mm-hmm.
And this building has mad complaints and violations.
Yeah.
Including no heat.
Yeah.
The fire was started by a
space heater. Which is why they had the space heaters in there.
Yeah. The fire was started by a space heater. And I mean, I have a space heater. It's because my windows have drafts. But, you know, also, if you have, that building looks like it might have not had radiator heat. It might have had centralized heat. It doesn't, because I have it's definitely, that building can't be more than 50 years old.
No. I think it was built in the, I feel like I heard like 70s.
So early 70s. I'm in a pre-war, yeah. So I have radiator. Radiator heat is completely uncontrollable. So that's it. So that's a little different. But yeah, that the fire was started with a space heater, and probably because of faulty wiring, faulty doors, faulty whatever else spread
so
quickly. So yeah, it's good that Adams was on scene. It's bad that there's still a link between him and the landlord. And that's been like the underlying note of Adams, the 2 weeks of his term so far, is like, there's just too much shady, wrong, off shit connected.
It's too much of my man's in them.
He's being very niggerish. It's very niggerish.
Like, I'm just putting all my peoples on.
It's exactly, and it's shocking to me only because he's been in public office of some sort for quite some time already. But like, it's very what they expect us to do when they get.
But I also want to say, his role in public office was not hot lights the way it is right now.
Right.
He was a borough president, and prior to that, he was a state senator,
right?
Yeah. Which is really a Albany position. That's really not a position that is highly regarded or well known or well publicized. Borough president is a lot of shaking hands and kissing babies at senior citizen center openings,
and
making sure that, you know, so and so's getting their stuff for the block parties and shit like that.
Yeah.
It is no disrespect, because the borough president is important, but it is not quite the level of this. And being able to put someone on in a position that only operates within Brooklyn is not the same as putting them on in a city that matters. And I say that particularly because he is not the mayor of Nowhere, New Jersey, with 20,000 residents. He is not the mayor of some podunk Midwest-ass town that is a part-time mayor that still got to go to work every day, okay? He is the mayor of New York fucking City, and that matters, my guy. It matters a lot. Yeah.
And he's wilding, like, immediately. Like, at least ease into the nigga shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, ease into it. Like, every person...
Also, he is not. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
But what he is doing is that Eric Adams, and I always said this, he earned that position because he campaigns his ass off. He showed up at
everything.
He kissed all the babies. He shook all the hands, and he did all of the fucking grunt work that it takes to be mayor. And he sold himself on that law and order shit.
Yeah,
that's what he sold himself on, and that was why he was able to get so much support. Because when somebody got shot in Brooklyn or somebody got robbed over here, guess who was over there in front of the cameras? It was him.
Mm-hmm. And he's got all the labor union support.
As he should be. He's still doing that. Like, sadly, there's a girl who worked at Burger King on 116th Street who was killed for like $100. Fucking ridiculous. And, you know, Eric Adams was there a couple of days ago and, you know, was pledged, and I believe him, to catch the person who did it and prosecute him to the fullest extent of the law. So he's still moving that way.
He's going to be law and order because that is what his term is going to rest on that. The crime rate and probably housing are going to be the two things that either makes him or breaks him. We know for sure he's got the ability to do the law and order thing because he's got 20 years as a cop. He knows all of the ins and outs.
And he's only putting former cops in his administration. Apparently, every fucking person is a former NYPD officer.
Yeah,
but exactly. They also all are black men, and I feel like that's going to trip him up very quickly.
Well, we could look at his brother, right?
Right.
So
Bernard Adams.
He puts his brother in the position of deputy commissioner. And, you know, I mean, like, the guy had been out of NYPD for over 11 years.
Yeah, 2011.
Like, that's a long time. A major gap.
Yeah.
And so to think that was even a feat, like, my issue is like, either he has the worst staff and administrative people on his team that would suggest this, or he is completely disregarding.
He doesn't listen. I feel like it's the latter. I don't listen vibes. Because I'm like, can you just hire some, even the worst people who staff up your mans and them, they'll have a couple of people who actually come from some kind of political something, right? Like, put your brother, who's been in charge of fucking Virginia Commonwealth University parking for 10 years, give him like a comms job. Just give him some low level, right? Like, don't make him a deputy fucking commissioner. And then the news that broke yesterday, which was the superior officer of the Gun License Bureau kind of ringing an alarm that one of Adams' people came to him talking about possibly removing NYPD from their post at Gracie Mansion, from the mayor's office, and putting in armed civilians.
Yeah.
Like, and that guy also, who made that request, also a former NYPD officer who's on Adams' transition team. But like, why are you doing this week too? Like, this is not... What are you doing right now? Like, call the FOI. What are you talking about?
But you know what I know?
Pull police off? Talking about we want to do security differently. The fuck does that mean, nigga? What you doing?
I suspected fuckery even during the campaign, but I knew it was fuckery. And I think this kind of went almost under the radar for a lot of people when he was sworn in.
I was about to say,
we don't do that. You have this.
That's not what we do.
There's a ceremony in front of Gracie Mansion. In front of the City Hall. And you know, everybody's there, and the dignitaries are there, and the police are there, and their blues, and the firemen, and so on.
And on the stage,
and on the press, and then there's a speech, and so on. And, you know, the pompous circumstance. But when I saw Adams swear himself in at 12:01.
With a picture of his mama and a brandy sniffer.
Yeah. And was that on CNN? I was like, okay, because I was like, wait, what's going on? Like, is this real?
People keep asking me, like, y'all usually do that? And I'm like, no absolutely
never
not.
Have. Right then, I was like, okay, he's a lights, camera, action guy, and he's gonna be a lights, camera, action guy
that's gonna get him that hubris. But, gonna fuck him up.
And listen, even to come back a little bit back to what we initially were talking about with the fire, like, he Now it's time for him to show and prove. Like, he does a lot of me and my.
My team, my city, my schools.
Well, you know what?
I need my teachers in school. The fuck? Whatever.
So, yeah, you need to keep that energy with making sure these buildings are held accountable. Because, so apparently, they're saying that the heat was working. And to be quite honest, I think everything that's coming out here, I'm looking at everything with a side eye. Mm. We haven't heard from any of the residents. I think there was one resident that was quoted who said she had heat in her apartment. One resident.
Yeah. That don't mean the building had heat. It might have been your line.
And we are not sure. The thing about heat is that, yeah, your heat can be on, but not sufficient. So in a technical sense, your heat can be on. That shit could be at 62 degrees. Nigga, if it's 30 outside, the heat is on technically.
That don't
mean it's sufficient in your apartment. So if they are using heaters, that is usually an indication that the heat is not sufficient.
No, they're not putting the heat on. Like, sometimes landlords don't put the heat on until like 3 hours at night, right? Like, in the coldest parts of the day or the night, you ain't got no heat. You got it because you're at the mercy of your landlord sending the heat up. And that's what I think people need to understand about most of these buildings is that it's not like you and your apartment is just a thermostat. You're at the mercy of the super in that boiler downstairs. Deciding what they're going to do with the whole building. But yeah, you're right, Sean. Now he's got to prove something and... It's all great to do a good, it's Trump-ish. Do a good song and dance in front of the camera, talk a lot of shit. Except he at least is saying somewhat the right things. He's out of pocket. But like even now yesterday, he was talking about education and randomly decided to throw shots at Chicago. Nigga, we ain't got no beef with Chicago. Why are you talking about Chicago? Now Lori Lightfoot, because she also a nigga, is going to jump up in here.
Miss Lori better keep her own closet clean over there, down there to the school system.
I mean, that's probably what she's gonna say about him. Like, nigga, you got nothing to worry about.
That's a part of what I recognize that he does is that there's certain people in life, man, that are just not necessarily ready for that next phase, even though on paper it looks like they're ready.
Yeah. He ain't ready for politics for real.
He's not on this level, not at this scale. Is that a guy you want representing you at a union table? Probably.
Yeah.
Is that, you know what I'm saying? Like, that is probably the guy you want to do those sorts of things. He is not the kind of guy that he needs to understand that as a New York City mayor, there is no buts in this equation when people have died.
Yep.
There is no, hey, maybe if you did, this is what we need you to do. Listen, the doors are, so in the projects now, the doors do close automatically.
Okay.
Your doors close automatically, specifically to contain fires. Mm-hmm. That is literally what the design is, because the smoke inhalation, because now you can't use the elevator. If you got elders on the 5th, 6th, 7th floor, some of these buildings go up to 20 floors.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have fire escapes. So there are tons of things here that could be done. And we are literally a week. They haven't even, God bless, they haven't even buried these people.
No.
And we're already giving like analysis. Like, we don't know what's what right now. And just to make the assumption that it was because you left the door open. Yeah, I mean, they left the door open because it was a fucking fire in their home.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, they're not thinking, let me close the door. They're thinking, let me get out of here.
Let me get who I can get. Let me alert who I can alert. You know, there are just so many different things. And we oftentimes, again, we watch movies and we think how we would normally react in an emergency. We think that we would have this calm tone and we're going to be like the fucking Rock and we're going to figure this out and get everything. Like, people panic, man.
Yeah,
particularly children.
Yeah, like, when a family's in the house and there's some young kids in there, or some babies even, you said people are going to panic because all they're trying to do is get their family and get the fuck out of the house.
So now they're talking about faulty wiring, or the heater was on for several days uninterrupted, which is a blanketed suggestion that they did not adhere to maybe unplugging the heater and letting it reset, or that it was overworking in some sort of way. Again, it is an attempt to victim blame. Mm-hmm. It is poor messaging. It is terrible messaging, and it's wrong. Like it's just it's wrong on so many different occasions. And to be quite honest, whatever is happening to those people, and I'm glad the community has come, and there are several different places where there are GoFundMes. There are several places that are looking for donations and drop-offs and things like that if you want to help. Mm-hmm. The outpouring was so overwhelming, you should check it again to see if they still even need things. But, like, while that's great and the community will come and band together, like, somebody's fucking head needs to roll and somebody needs to be accountable.
Yes.
Like, in the immediate, not some fucking 4-year-old civil case.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that fire really like this.
This hasn't happened since Happy Land, dude. This is the worst fire since Happy Land.
It really bothered me to see the you know those people and babies dying and what those families are going through.
Yeah, because the majority of the dead, I think, were kids.
Yeah,
and it was smoke inhalation. It was smoke inhalation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then
which is often what you die from.
Yeah, that coupled with what I mentioned earlier, which is the 19-year-old girl who was, you know, just working, you know, at Burger King, earning a little extra money, getting shot by some dude over $100. Like,
and apparently she had been asking to get moved off that shift
because
she didn't.
Yeah, so because that Burger King, you know, that's,
on 116th Street is open 24 hours, which I know.
Or is it I didn't know it was a 24.
Every once in a while, I just be wanting a Whopper, and that's the closest Burger King to me. That's the only reason I know that. But she had been asking to be moved off that late shift.
Yeah, because that area is bonkers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, I can imagine.
It's like a real interesting, like, in-between area because as you go the length of, or the width, I guess I should say, of 116th Street, like, there's part of it that's, like, Africa. Yep. There's part that's, like,
Mexico.
Mexico, there's part that's gentrified Harlem. There's part that's kind of white. You know what I mean? And then, like, but there are, like, that stretch where Burger King is, like, all the way down to the end, there's by the highway, by the FDR, there's, like, a Target and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm, but that stretch, like, where Burger King is, it's kind of like a desolate, there's not a lot in that
block. Not a lot there. It's like the little Mexico block where they have the place I used to talk about before, Taco Mix.
Like, right before it is a big nursery that a bunch of people go to, and then after it, you're closer to, like, Target and stuff. But right there, it's not really, like, it's a very weird area.
And what's going on in New York now with the homeless and the junkies and all that stuff coming back, that's an area where they are.
They're on that
east side area. So them being open 24 hours is... This happened, I think, at like 12:45 in the morning. And I was shocked. I was like, why were they still open? Because I figured they'd close at like 10 o'clock. I didn't know
what's going on. Which is surprising because, like, a lot of 24-hour spots have not kept those hours during the pandemic. Like, the Popeyes on 125th Street, that bitch be closed at 10 o'clock.
Because it's fucking dangerous, man.
Exactly. It's dangerous, and they're short-staffed, and they don't have the demand. So I am surprised that's kept those hours. But apparently she had been asking to get moved off that shift because it was she probably had like a handful of people come through all night, and it wasn't even worth it. You know?
Yeah, other incidents.
Yeah.
Yes, I was about to say other things that had just not risen to this particular issue. You know what I'm saying?
Because when it gets cold like this, the homeless guys are gonna go in a place like that and stay there all night and do no God knows what. Like, you might have somebody like pissing on the floor. Like, you don't know what's, you know, and they got to deal with this shit. So. I mean, you know, blessings to her and her family because that shit was awful, man.
Over $100.
$100. And apparently she gave him the money and he was walking out and he came back and shot her.
Well, he had also pistol whipped a customer. There was a customer inside,
pushed the manager in the face.
Which is usually always an indication that a person is really apt for violence is when they go in and rob a place while a customer is there. Yeah. Right. Usually they'll wait and kind of, you know, most robberies don't end like this, and they kind of just want to wait until the coast is clear a little bit to have.
And also fewer. Right now, that wouldn't have been hard to do because you can't eat in the store right now because of COVID. So you have to get your shit to go. So yeah, he was really just on.
Yeah, he was on one.
He was on one. So yeah, I said peace and blessings to her, man, and her family. That shit
and her family,
an awful man. I don't have much else to talk about. Did y'all watch? Did any of y'all watch Stay Close?
I did.
I don't know what that is.
So Stay Close is a miniseries on Netflix. It's kind of like, did you see Click? Did y'all watch Clickbait?
Yep, I watched that too.
You watch Clickbait? Okay, so it's like a miniseries. This was in the UK. They're not the same.
This one was kind of like actually, it reminded me more of there was this series. The Stranger? Did y'all watch
that? A lot of people, I didn't see that guy. This guy, I think this guy wrote that too.
It was kind of like
Harley
that.
Harley Quinn. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like a thriller kind of whodunit, twists and turns, you know, kind of thing, a mystery, murder mystery, all these things kind of, you know, all these characters kind of intersecting. Over seven or eight episodes.
I think it was eight episodes.
Yeah. And it's like a you know, like a fun watch. It ain't deep, but it's just kind of like, oh shit. It's kind of like that.
Yeah, it's
thing.
A good binge and
great binge.
The same thing with The Stranger. The eventual plot twist at the end. There's literally no way you could have put it together. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no threads that you could have pulled. There was no point at which you would have been like, oh. It's like literally not until like minutes before it's revealed that you're actually like, oh shit, it's this. And then The Stranger is the same way. So yeah, it's good if you're just looking for something interesting to binge, not super seriously, but to get a little bit wrapped up in. It's good for that. I feel like there was something else I wanted to recommend to y'all. I can't remember. Oh, Peace to Sean. I'm in Mayor of Kingstown now. I think I'm on episode 5.
You know, you go. It's funny about Mayor Kingstown. Like I'm, you know, from watching social media anyway.
More people are watching.
It's picking up steam. Like more people are like suggesting it to people, and people are watching it. And it's
well,
like,
because it actually gets more intense as the season goes along. Mm. So I think there was a few. It's a great story, and it's definitely not a show you can jump into at all.
Gotta watch from the beginning.
You cannot jump in episode.
And I had to watch. I had to watch a couple episodes twice because I was doing something else, and I was like,
"Yes, you might miss something." It's a very well done show. It, you know, think Wire, think Soprano. Think along those lines where there's a lot of incestuous shit happening, right?
And the connectivity between politics, law enforcement, drug dealers, street dudes. The back channels and the way things are handled in certain cities, like it reminds me of The Wire and The Sopranos. You're right in that regard. It's very that, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I just want to mention Peacemaker. None of y'all don't watch this, but Peacemaker is a character from Suicide Squad. And it's funny. It's starring John Cena.
I didn't make it through Suicide Squad. So
yo, Peacemaker. It's really, really good. It's really good. But I know none of y'all gonna watch it, but it's really, really good.
Encanto, the latest Disney Pixar. I have not watched it yet, but I put a poll out.
Excellent.
To ask, because I'm seeing grown-ups are crazy about this fucking movie. It's like grown-ups, people keep playing clips from the movie, the songs from the movie. So I'm going to watch it, but I put out a poll yesterday to ask, was it going to make me cry and how much? Because I was unprepared. I was unprepared for the end of Coco.
Coco happened.
Nothing will prepare you for the end of Coco.
Coco, a nigga was in a puddle in Coco. I was in a puddle at the end of Coco. Like, what the fuck? Why y'all making me think about my grandparents?
Yo!
Why am I in a fucking puddle?
Nigga face was wet. We literally used to put my grandmother in those pigtails in the latter part of her life. I was on a plane. We were deplaning. I was not moving. They were like, ma'am, you gotta
get up. That's what happened. I watched Up on a plane.
Oh my god!
And I didn't know. This is way back when there were still DVDs. Like my, right. my man, I work. We used to burn
you
DVDs.
In the gut immediately.
Yo, my man, yo. Burn easy. You should watch. I said, oh, you got up. Let me put that up. So I was on the plane. I had my little DVR fucking player back then. The DVD player rather. Yo, I was like, are you serious, bro? Like, why you wouldn't tell me that a nigga gonna be bent over with snot coming out my nose? What the? Listen, I was like, I literally called that nigga off the plane, bad. Like upset at him. Like, right. bro, why did you not tell me? You got to warn me, bro.
I felt the same way about Inside Out.
Let me give you the rundown of why Encanto resonates so well. So the story is that the Madrigal family, each of them have a very special gift, like on some superhero shit. And there's a ceremony when you're a kid where you turn a doorknob and your gift is revealed to the family. It's a way to help the village and blah, blah, blah. So there's the main character, I think it's Mirabelle. She is the only person in this family who has not received a special gift. Mm. And so you go through this story of her trying to like...
figure out her gift or whatever.
Yeah.
Not even figure out her gift, but save the rest of the family's gifts. Because the thing that the protagonist is going through is that, you know, they're losing the magic. Okay. And they don't know why. So
people were saying, like, if you feel like a black sheep in your family, or if you're, like, the oldest, or if you're in a relationship where, like, you're the scapegoat kid and somebody else is a golden child, or something like, or if you have unresolved family trauma, it's going to fuck. Because some people were like, I was okay, it wasn't as bad as Coco. And some people like, fam, I cried from the beginning to the end. So I think it depends
Very beautiful.
I'm definitely going to watch it. I'm going to watch it.
Check it out. It's good. So the music is amazing. Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote all the music for this.
Yeah, apparently if you don't talk about Bruno, it's going to be in my head for 3 weeks.
Talk about Bruno. It's so good.
So let me ask a question. Like, what is the most, I guess, intense, for lack of a better term? Like, what's the hardest? What Pixar movie made you cry the most?
Well, this isn't Pixar. I mean, Up is
animated. The one.
Up is one for you.
But also Inside Out.
I never saw Inside Out.
Incredible. Inside Out was like a sneak attack. I think me and Mom were flying back from France or London or something. I shook her and woke her up to make her turn the movie on, but I'm like sobbing. She's like, the fuck is wrong with you? I'm like, you gotta watch this movie. But anyway, but there is this movie on Netflix. It's a animated short, came out last year. It's called Campus. It's about a black family. It's not Pixar.
What happens in
that shit? It's called Canvas. It's on Netflix.
What happens?
It's
about a widow.
The grandfather's a widow.
Okay,
artist.
I didn't see it. It's not what I saw. Okay.
He's a widowed artist, and you know he's mourning his wife.
It broke you down.
It broke me. I mean, it's beautiful, but just oh my god, just kind of in that up opening sequence. Right?
It's only like 9 minutes.
It's very short, and I don't even think there's any dialogue. But I can't remember any dialogue. But it's beautiful. It's beautiful. So I want to highly recommend. Everybody watch that. But for me, I think, but you know what? I have not watched Up ever again because of that.
Yeah, me either. I've not watched Up.
I've not watched Up again. Anytime I see, because you know, people have posted, people have played it, I always got to look away. Once they hit middle age, I'm out. I'm out. Bye.
I'm going to say, as much as I said, Up had me on that plane fucked up, I'm going to still say Coco.
But the end of Coco got me.
Destroyed me.
I'm sitting
there thinking about all my relatives that passed on, and like,
oh my god,
oh man, I was just ruined. Yeah. What's your number?
Definitely Coco, but there's also a Pixar movie short on, I want to say it's Netflix. If not, you can find it on YouTube. But it's called Float, and it's about parents dealing with a kid that's differently abled. No dialogue. It's like an 8-minute short. And you know, it starts with the two parents in the house, and the kid is, you know, with this balloon, and everything in the house is colored and, for lack of a better term, normal. And then the second he steps out the door, it's like the balloon either deflates or he can't hold on to it, and everything's black and white because you know, the kid is just struggling in the way that
He's
out of a safe space. And it's like, and then as a parent, you kind of want to have them not float. You want them to stay on the ground so everybody's not looking at this kid floating. So it kind of goes through all that. And like, it just broke me in 8 minutes.
Wow. Bro, you be touched by any of these joints?
Lying on the
floor. No.
I'm good, brother.
I probably cried more when Red had Jimmy killed in Five Heartbeats.
He had to run Jimmy over.
He had to do all that.
The other movie that breaks me down to the white meat, which I don't watch that much no more, I can't, is the End of Color Purple. Yo, when she comes back, the night I'm cooked when you know Whoopi's all old and they start doing the hand clap. And then you know because of that whole setting too, like the South, it reminds me of like you know being in the South and just like I'm good. I mean, it's well.
You know what gets me that doesn't seem to get anybody else is in A League of Their Own when Gina Davis thinks her husband is dead. Like that second where they tell Betty Spaghetti that George dies.
Yeah.
Right after that, Gina Davis goes back to the room and she's like sobbing uncontrollably because she hasn't heard from her husband in so long. It's like,
I haven't watched
Shoot me in the face.
What's funny is like, it doesn't take a lot to pull at my heartstrings when I'm watching TV and movies. So I can't even tell you what movie really fucks me up.
Honestly, the last time I really felt emotional about that, and I have to say this, was How to Get Away with Murder with Cicely Tyson.
With
dementia, because at that very time my mom was going through that, so like her like having those bits of memories and then going into that fog. Like that shit, I was so connected to that. Like her helping her out of the shower and all of that sort of stuff.
We lost Sean.
His iPad's on 2% and was about to die.
But what I will say before he comes back, this is how much of a softie I am. So there's this commercial, it's a couple years old, but there is a commercial. This shit honestly makes me cry every time I see it. There's the family dog that's like, a golden retriever or something. The family has a baby. The baby has his favorite toy. The toy is like a frog or something. The baby play, but the baby's scared of the dog. And so every time the dog tries to come to near the baby, the baby
it's like an Asian family. It's an Asian family.
Yeah,
right?
The baby's freaking out, crying. The dog looks so hurt. Like the dog really looks like, bruh, I just want to play with the baby. And the you know the parents are kind of like, oh, okay, we're gonna work it out. And the dad orders a costume from Amazon to put on the dog. And the dog's like standing outside looking at the baby from the screen window. And the dad orders a little frog costume on Amazon and put on the dog. And then all of a sudden the baby fucks with the dog. And the dog, the dog just looks so relieved and because he just wants to love up on the baby.
Yeah,
the dog is acting his ass off.
Yeah, the dog is like the dog like, is actually acting in that joint.
Yeah,
there's a thread on oh sorry. There's a thread on Twitter right now.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Where someone asked the question, show me a clip of the best acting you've ever seen. And if you're not crying all up and through that thread of those clips people are putting, especially the ones where there's like some sort of, I want to say Korean movie where the dude has to say goodbye to his kid. The kid doesn't understand, like he's jumping off a train or something to save their lives. Oof. And the way she is screaming, she had to be like 3 years old. She needs an Oscar. Wow. That young lady, that cry, like I felt it in my soul. Don't look at that thread. It's basically what I'm saying.
I want to say one last thing. I don't want to stretch it out too long. So I'm going to tell Nye, don't go ham. I know you're going to go ham. Don't go ham because we'll just wrap this joint up. Y'all got to stop fucking playing with Quincy Jones' name.
100%.
Y'all got to stop playing. Y'all got to stop playing with God's name.
Throwing his name around.
Like he just Like Timberland, I'm so, and you know, and I like Tim as a he's a good dude, and but I'm so disappointed Timberland for posting that like he didn't get his big hit to Thriller. Like, what are we talking about, man? Like, and
Thriller is not a big break. You know who else didn't have a hit before Thriller? Like Thriller, nobody had a hit.
It's an anomaly. It's never gonna happen.
It was
again.
Like a once in a lifetime situation, and it wasn't Quincy, because it was, that was what I was trying to explain to people, because people were trying to add all kind of extra shit. Timbaland memes, Timbaland said, no, mama, the words are on the fucking meme.
Yeah.
Big break and fucking big hit.
He didn't get his big hit till he was 50.
Quincy talking about one of the architects of Black music as a whole.
And not even just Black music. Quincy was music fucking period. Frank Sinatra's band leader. He had done big band. He had been a world-class trumpeter. My man already had 40 Grammy nominations. He already had 4 Oscar nominations. He already composed In the Heat of the Night. The music.
He scored the Wiz?
And he scored the Wiz. That's how he got with Michael in the first place.
That's what I'm trying to say. The reason he was in the position to do Thriller
right.
was because of who he was and what he had done.
Already.
Yeah, Mike didn't pick the nigga out of obscurity.
It was like 10,000 hours shit. Like, Quincy, and somebody even tried to say, because there were two problems. One was that too many people took this, because there's an argument that's happening, which is stupid as fuck, where when Quincy's name comes up, that whether Michael made Quincy or Quincy made Michael. And I was like, it's a dumbass argument either way.
Either way.
They both needed
it. Neither one of them made each other.
Exactly. They both needed to be what they were. They both had to bring the experiences and the recognition and the celebrity and the renown and the talent.
And the broad natural talent. Yes.
To come together to even make Thriller happen. It does not happen independently of either of them, right?
No.
So it's a dumbass conversation. So people were trying to argue like whether Michael made Quincy, and I was like, that's not the argument. It's dumb, but that's not the argument. The discussion is, this was not Quincy's first hit. It was not Quincy's big break. And then people be like, well, he hadn't had a hit as big as Thriller. Literally nobody had a hit as big as Thriller.
You can't judge it on
nobody
that.
Nobody in the world, ever.
Because you goofy niggas, they were coming off of Off the Wall.
Right.
Which was like the as big as you could get. Like, it wasn't like he pulled the nigga. Quincy Jones was like laid up in a one bedroom, fucked up.
And Mike was like, yo, come get this. The dude, which was platinum, and an album.
And a bunch of other shit.
Yeah.
Rufus, the Brothers Johnson. I mean, come on. He did the Sanford and Son, theme. And
Quincy was already Quincy.
Ray Charles, come on, what are you talking about?
Quincy was 30 plus years deep in his career. Like, that meme really made it sound like this nigga had just been doing demos.
Yeah, just bullshit. Like,
non-charting, random ass, whatever the fuck, ever. Yeah,
like, he was just looking for a shot, looking for a big,
I just need y'all niggas who only listen to the music you listen to, right? Who only care about what was on MTV, what was on Hot 100. But again, Q did have Hot 100 hits. But like, Q's career spans beyond what you consider popular music. It was because Frank Sinatra was pop. When he started in jazz, jazz was pop, right? But like, the way we talked about Betty White's career in TV is how we're going to talk about Quincy. Quincy's career is the history of music.
Mm-hmm.
From jazz and bebop, big band, coming all the way forward. And like, there is no this generation's Quincy. There is no...
There ain't gonna be another Quincy Jones.
There is not. He is singular.
There's no other Quincy Jones.
I wish we could just be present and enjoy things for what they are today. Stop with the comparisons, because it's impossible.
And nobody loved Michael more than me. Like, don't get it fucked up. Like, I'm not. This is obviously not a Michael bit. Like, nobody loves Michael more than me. But let's stop the goofy shit.
Stop comparing The Weeknd to anybody great. This is not another thing, Tim.
And I like this Weeknd album a lot. I really like Dawn FM a lot. I think it's really well done. You know, the concept of it is super dope. There's some smashing records on there. To me, it's Weeknd's best project to date. Mm-hmm. It's great. It's fucking great. It's not Thriller. Stop, Tim. Stop.
There's never going to be another Thriller.
Stop.
It's not even like
and that's
dangerous.
Okay.
It's a stop.
There's not another Aretha. There's not, and even moving forward, there's not another Aretha. There's not another Whitney. There's not another Mariah. There's not another Janet. There's not another Quincy. There's not another Michael. There's not going to be another Beyonce. Like, it's okay.
It's okay. It's all right. It's fine.
Okay.
It's fine. It's fine to just enjoy these people for who they are and what they are. And, their,
and let and, other people enjoy things too.
Yeah, just let us live. Just let us live. It's cool, bro. On that note, we're going to wrap it up. Yeah, that's it. Happy Martin Luther King's birthday again.
And happy 40th birthday to me again. All month.
Okay.
All month. Yes, all ma'am. Month. All month.
And stay all warm month. Out there. Stay
Boy,
dry.
It's cold out there.
Yeah, I got some snow coming too.
And the Omicron is still outside. Oh, that's the other thing I want to say. Just because I know more people who have had COVID. I think we said this last week too, because I've known more people since last week. Still be careful though, right? Because like, I think that some of us are getting a little relaxed because they said if you're vaccinated, it'll be like...
Yeah, cold. Like it's mild, air quotes. Okay, fuck around then.
You don't know
if it's going to be mild to you.
To you,
everybody's system is different, obviously. So
yeah.
what Carol had might not work for you, Betty. Don't fuck around.
Right. And some people are still having long COVID symptoms.
Yeah, so. a lot of people.
Be careful.
A lot of people tell me. Like, I saw my man in the gym a few weeks ago, and he got it. He had COVID early, pre vaccination, and he's like, "Yeah, my breathing is basically fucked up forever. Like, I got so much lung damage."
People who still can't smell and taste. There's no way I could navigate life without the pleasure of food.
Yeah, so be careful.
Nothing else keeps you in the house.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we're gonna wrap it up. We'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.